right here, so. Oh, we topped it. Whoa, cold topped it.
Okay. Gotta go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he on the sink.
Welcome to the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Mark and Kevin, and we've got a special guest, Mr. Tom Gandy.
How's it going, boys? You all right?
Yeah, all right, mate. How
thanks
are you?
For having me. Yeah, all good, all good.
Oh, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you taking the time, mate. How's things, Tom? How's life in, believe you're in isolation at the minute? Just got back traveling.
Yeah.
You're back home at the minute?
Well, I'm not even at home. I'm isolating in a family friend's house. I couldn't go home, unfortunately, to isolate, so I'm in this house. It's up for sale, so there's no furniture. There's no nothing. So I'm sleeping on a mattress on the floor. It's
oh wow,
not much crack. Like,
but. So we're actually what you're saying is we're the highlight of your day, then.
Yeah, basically, I've done nothing all day apart from speak to you boys.
If there's anything else more important, like pin positions or whatever, you probably wouldn't be bothered, would you?
Yeah. So how's things being, mate? All right.
Yeah, good, good, good. I've just been. I did 2 weeks in Spain. Challenge tour, and then I'm approaching the end of my 2 weeks isolation, so the whole of November I've been in a bubble or in isolation, like. So
yeah, strange times. This is obviously the next part of our professional route, Tom. You've got full playing rights on the challenge tour and on the European tour, so you've mixed between both tours this year, haven't you, in the new world of golf. So we'll definitely be talking all about your journey. But first of all, obviously the reason for these episodes and these routes is just to get some insight into your full journey from how you got into golf, how your golf journey's been, and getting to the point where you turned professional. So just from a beginning perspective, what was it that got you into golf?
Yeah, well, my old man was captain in my local club where I'm still representing now, Rowney Golf Club. So he'd have been captain when I was five, but we kind of were up there a bit anyway. He always liked the beer and beer in the clubhouse. It's a good club for that sort of side of things. So me and my brothers, I've got an elder brother and a younger brother. We all grew up practicing together and playing together. So my mum used to take us up, or dad would sit in the clubhouse and have a beer with the boys, and we'd be out about practicing and that from kids, really.
What a life.
Living the dream, yeah.
Definitely.
And then, we come back to it, sort of, just did that as a young kid and then come back to it school age 10, 11. And I'm sure you boys sort of similar things, sort of 36 holes a day in summer and drop the golf club and leave.
That seems to be the common theme that we're getting. Summer, first thing in the morning, last thing at night, as many holes as you can.
Yeah. Unbelievable, isn't it? You do so many laps of the putting green, having you put two in the Open, you put two in the Masters.
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable, yeah. Chip and comps the lot.
Exactly. It was good. It was, me and my brothers and another group of lads similar age. So there was sort of probably 10, 12 of us who all, in a way, spurred each other on, if you know what I mean. So it was
a bit
good.
Of competition, yeah. That's what you need, isn't it? When you're younger, we've had the same as we've grew up. Yeah, there's a good group. You're all off a similar handicap, similar age as such. And you take each other on, don't you?
Exactly, yeah. It just brings everybody along, and it keeps it, as a kid, all you're after is fun anyway, isn't it? And
if of course.
Mates are doing it, you're winning, aren't you?
Definitely, yeah. So when did you get to, obviously you're starting off playing for a bit of fun there, just going down more of a family thing. When did it get to the point where you thought, you know what, I'm actually all right at this game? And what was your handicap? How did your handicap change growing up?
I can't remember the point that I got to scratch. I know my first handicap was 48. I remember that.
I think you're the highest that we've had.
There really? You go.
Yeah,
you're probably the best we've had.
Yeah, I was a proper chopper. So it was kind of like that. And then at 16 in the men's Isle of Man County Championships, I shot two over, I think, first round. And then I was four under second round, and it was like junior record at the course. And I qualified, and then I played eight-time champion in the first round. I beat him age 16, and it was like, I don't know, it was sort of the start of things for me, really.
You've arrived, yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I kind of played for the Isle of Man junior team for a bit, but we weren't ever, it was always like the big six against Lancashire, Yorkshire, you boys, you know, and we never were competitive. So it wasn't like, you didn't get a great deal out of that. But then that at 16 got me into the men's sort of squad selections and stuff, which was good, a great start, really.
That was the first time you really competed against like top level golfers at that point, then around the 16 age, was it?
Yeah, I mean, that was just on island as well. So, I mean, I started to go off island then playing for like the men's team when I was about 18, 19. All the while I was obviously in education and that at that point. And then I did my degree on Ireland as well. And it kind of, as you go through your degree and you're doing less hours in class, say, I spent more and more time practicing, if you know what I mean. So
yeah.
I come out the back of that age 21 and it was like, well, I'm going to go play a bit. I'm getting pretty good. I've been away with one of my mates a few times, played sort of national stuff, played a lot of Northern Order Merit, 36 holers and that.
Yeah.
And I kind of had a bit of success, nothing major, but I felt like if other people could do it, why can't I? So pretty serious then.
Well, how was that then? Obviously, I don't imagine it's cheap to travel over here and play all those type of events. How was that financially and things? And was that was that a blocker for you then? Or?
Yeah, it was quite tough. It was, so me, one of my good mate, the lad that was going at the time, he was working in the bank over here and he was getting the summers off to go away and play. So he'd save and I'd kind of jump in with him in the car on the ferry and split costs and stuff. But I've always worked in a bank as well. So like I'd work over winter and then golf through the summer and stuff. But when I was at school, I was sort of job sharing with a woman who was she had a young kid. So she was term time. I was non-term time. So if I was out of school, I was in work sort of thing. So I'd always try to save. And my mom helped me out a bit towards the back end of that as well, which was massive. So yeah, that's how it went really.
Yeah, wasn't you saying there, Tom, when you're playing national level and stuff, how does it work with the Isle of Man? Do they compete like against England or counties, or how does it go?
Yeah, we're classed as a county of England in Golf Worlds. Yeah, so we've always had the English handicap system and all that. So we've been one of the northern counties as long as I've ever known it, really. So
I see.
That then made the next sort of stage. I got selected for England because we were technically English, if you know what I mean.
Yeah,
even though I don't have any English blood in me,
Isle of Man through and through, lovely.
Yeah,
good lad. So yeah, so how's it? Just talk us through your amateur career then. Obviously, you've set the scene there. You're obviously playing county level at a young age for the Isle of Man team, and you just mentioned there you got to national. So how did that come about? Obviously, you're playing in Northern Order Merit. Were you winning much?
Yes. The only Northern Order Merit title I think I ever won was the Lancashire Lynx Trophy, S&A and Formby Air. The overall, I didn't even win one of the individual ones. I just won the 72 whole thing.
Yeah.
I just had some good results. I think I had quite a few top threes, top fives and stuff. Obviously, at that point in time, Mark Young, John Carroll, boys like that, you ain't beating them around the course. You don't know as well as them, but do you know what I mean?
It was
a lot of good. Really good standard of goals.
He used to clean up. I think Carroll's still cleaning up now, I think.
I'm sure he is. Yeah, I've loved how much he's won over the years. But yeah, I kind of did all right there. And I just was coming over more and more with my mate. And it come out the back of my degree. I was 21, so 2013. And I was like, right, I'm going to have a go at this. My mum helped fund me that summer and I played like English Am and stuff like that. Had some... I think I finished about fifth or sixth to make the cut there. You know what I mean? I had a good finish in the stroke play and then won a couple of rounds, I think, and a few other bits. And I was like, well, I'm going to have a go at this. So I worked that next winter, 13 to 14, in life insurance over here, saved up as much as I could and played a full schedule next year, really, which was good. And that within that next year, I won the Lagonda Trophy. I don't know if you heard of that one.
What tour is this on, sorry, Tom?
This is just amateur. This is like national stuff. So I won that Lagonda Trophy, which has been won by like Westwood, Luke Donald, boys like that. So that was 72 all. Yeah. That was quite good. And picked up a few other good bits in England, took a liking to me, and I got a call to get in the A squad for the next winter, really. So it's good.
Who was you playing with at that time? Who was in the A squad? Anyone that we'd recognise now that pushed on, yeah?
Big Sean, yeah.
Big Sean, yeah.
Sean, isn't it? Yeah,
he was there.
Granddad, as he self-proclaims.
Yeah, well, I'm not far behind him. But yeah. But he is like a father figure, that fella, isn't he?
That is the man, isn't he?
Yeah. I don't know. Matty Jordan is obviously a very good golfer from around your area, and he's doing really well now. He was in the A squad with me, because I actually spent 3 years in that squad. So I've seen a lot of good players go through. None of necessarily... There's a lot of boys who are in the like elite squad, the top squad. Your Ashley Chesters, boys like that. Ben Stowe, guys like, you know, they've pressed on. But a lot of the A squad boys aren't necessarily struggling, but then they haven't pressed on as much that you might now know them, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, of course.
A real serious amount of talent, though. I'm not saying they're not talented, but it's just been the way it goes because there's a lot of depth in professional golf now, really.
Yeah, definitely. It just sounds like you've had a bit of a grind there then, mate. Obviously, working, playing, working, practicing, working, playing, working, practicing. Obviously, there's plenty of highs, which we'll talk about in a minute, in the professional game. Is there any lows for you throughout all that where you thought, you know what?
Yeah, I mean, the way the ferry to get back home is like, there's one at 7 o'clock in the evening from Liverpool. And if you don't make that one, there's one at 2 a.m. and it gets in at 6 a.m. The amount of times I've driven for that ferry as a pro, having not earned a lot of money because you're playing Euro Pro, and you drive up because most of them are down south, and you get to Liverpool for 7:30, you've just missed the freaking ferry, and you sat there and you're like, so then you sit around all night, you know what I mean? And you've done it all to earn 300 quid. And it's like, I'd be earning more sat at home, do you know what I mean? But it's not what I want to do. So there's plenty of sort of low moments, but I like the sort of having to work, having to do all that. Because every time I'd come out the back of winter and like, right, I do not want to do that. So let's get, you know, let's really graft on the golf. So
brilliant.
It's been quite good, I think. Yeah.
If you ever get one of them low moments in Liverpool, just hit us up and we'll come and cheer you up.
Yeah. No, that'd be good. Yeah, go sit in the tea rooms. Yeah.
100%, yeah. Brilliant. So then talk us through the, obviously, after the England squad then. What year are we there in?
I was 2014 to 17 with them. So I spent 3 years there, probably going backwards more than anything.
Did you? What was the reason for that?
I'd never really been coached. I'd just kind of done it all myself. You know, I just played golf and I played quite well. I learned on the golf course and I got my way around the golf course and then got to England stuff. And it was like, you might flush 5 shots down the flag, but it was like, no, you need to work on this. You need to do, you know what I mean? It works for some, doesn't work for everyone, I guess. But
of course, yeah.
There was a lot of new stuff to me at that point. Now, the way I am, I was like, oh, I've got to do everything, and kind of got a bit much maybe. So, because I used to have lessons with Jim Payne, great guy, Jim, and a lot of his stuff is literally just, if you're blocking it or whatever, he'd get you more fade in it. Sort of, it was very simple, quick fix sort of stuff, whereas this was all quite technical, quite hard to grasp for me. So it was 3 years of kind of struggling a bit, but.
Well, we talk about that now, obviously, on our normal podcast where we reviewed the golf, where the fact that we're putting now, putting's a bit technical, so you're finding some of the fellas who are trying something different every week. So you've got Garcia closing his eyes, you've got people with the mag grips, the fat grips, the tall grips, and it's obviously just going back to basics, like you're saying there. You find that sometimes that could be a lot easier, isn't it?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, you can. I mean, putting at the end of the day is such a simple, you're only moving the putter, like what, 1 foot, 2 feet total. It's, you don't have to do a lot, but it's what goes on in your head which makes the difference, isn't it, with that area of the game. So I mean, because I quite like what Sergio does there with his eyes, so I do it a bit in practice. It stops you thinking and it just puts it all down to feel. It's a really good pace putting drill as well, you know, to kind of see where you're at really with, in terms of pace on the greens on any different course. So there's loads of different ways of doing it, like you say. But
I started doing it a couple of weeks ago. I remember just opening my eyes and this 40-footer was just tracking towards the hole and went in. I was like, yes.
That'll stay. Yeah. Good, isn't it?
Well, he loves a bandwagon, Kev.
You know, from then 14 to 17, where you're saying you're getting lessons and different things, did you then grasp the lessons and then dig it in and grind it out and do what you were saying, or did you go back to basics?
I kept trying on what I was getting told to do by them, really, by the coaches there. And a lot of it, I mean, what I can't say speak highly enough of is how good they taught you how to practice, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So stuff like that still sticks with me now. Like, I'll use a lot of the drills, a lot of the stuff I did with England, but a lot of the technical stuff, I was like, well, I've got to do that because I've got to impress that coach if I want to get picked to play in this or whatever. Do you know what I mean? So you felt like you had to do it, which backfired a bit for me. But that was where turning pro for me was the best thing that I've done in years. It was like, I'm just playing for me now. Don't give a crap what anybody thinks or whether they want to select me or not. I'm doing me and I'm going to make the best decisions for me, if you know what I mean.
Well, talk to us about that then, Tom. So obviously you've made that transition. How difficult was that and how has that changed? Just in the early stages and what it takes to become a professional.
Yeah, well, I turned pro at Cube School 2017, stage 1. So it was probably the October or something. I turned pro, played badly, because you turn pro doesn't mean you're going to play well. And then that was me for the winter. So I went back and I think I worked on a building site that winter, and you know, it wasn't much fun. It was raining. I was shoveling sand every day and whatever. And I kind of was like, right, we need to really work on things. So I did. I went out to Portugal, played a little bit on like the Portugal Pro Golf Tour.
Yeah.
Which was, yeah, it was pretty good. That. Yeah. And then went to Euro Pro qualifying and had some good knocks, and I finished third in the first stage, and then finished 12th, I think, at final stage, when all you got to do final stage make the cut. So that teed me up well. I had full status for Euro Pro for 2018, which, you know, was massive, really. And at that point, I was like, this is just for me now. It's not for somebody to pick me or not. And I loved it. It was much better sort of. You've got to get used to trying to make more birdies, but I love that side of the game anyway, so it was kind of cool. It was good.
Obviously, once you're on the Euro Pro and you're in Portugal and all that, are you then getting lessons, or you're just totally on your own now? Like, you're not?
Yeah, I was kind of, at that point, I was checking in with Jim every...
Oh, yeah, Jim.
Whenever it would go wrong, sort of thing. So I never really had... it was once every couple of months or something. It was nowhere near as intense as it was with the sort of England stuff. But I was always, I'm a bit, you said, you're a bandwagon jumper. I was getting a bit that way. I was kind of like,
yeah,
what's flavor of the month on Instagram? Do you know what I mean? I'd give it a try. I was doing anything. It kind of, I had no direction, which is never going to take you to where you want to get to. So I've now got some really good coaches around me, and it's you know, helped a lot in the last year and a half, which has seen me just make some big jumps. So it's been good.
Brilliant.
So when you know it's in Portugal and then winter's, it like, how are you faring over there? Like, with, are there any of them challenge tour players over there? What's the sort of standard like?
Yeah, there's quite a few challenge tour boys play then Portugal stuff, because a lot of the time challenge tour doesn't start till sort of May, and then Portugal things are running Jan, Feb, March sort of thing. So
it's like a standard.
Yeah, exactly. The money ain't great in them, and they cost quite a bit to play them. But the standard's good. The guys that run the tour's really good. So it's good learning. Like, you're not really there to make money, if you know what I mean. You're only there to warm up and try to get ready as a thing. But it's something I might look to do again next year. I was actually speaking with Big Sean Townrow again about going out in February maybe. So we'll see how things look, really.
Definitely. And so just going back to when you did turn professional, what are you playing off there, Tom? Just to give an indication to people listening.
Well, the lowest I ever got was plus 4.4. So I never quite got to plus 5. But I turned pro off plus 3 dead, maybe. I wasn't at my best, you know what I mean? I was off. I was at that plus 4.4 before I got an England squad. So I kind of, you can probably see there that I stalled and sort of. But it kind of... Handicap sort of is a bit of a funny thing, isn't it? At club, like, it's hard to get your handicap really low at club level, but if you're playing national amateur stuff and standard scratch goes to 5-6 over, it's a bit, it only takes a half decent knock and you lose a shot. Do you know what I mean? Even at that low handicap. So
definitely.
Obviously it's all different now, and I don't really know how it works now, thankfully. It's a bit of a headache, is it?
we tried to do an episode on it, didn't we, and explained it, and it was your best 8 out of your most recent 20 scores is probably the easiest way to explain it. But there's a lot of complications to it, definitely.
Yeah.
No, as we both didn't have eight rounds, we both got docked 3 shots, and we both actually won 2-point odd handicappers, and we're just not.
Yeah.
That's good, though.
Yeah.
It's good on paper. It's not good when I step on the first. Yeah. I lose all my shots on the first hole.
Oh, that's the thing, isn't it? Yeah. Tough battle then.
But, that's it. Yeah. So you're saying there, obviously, you turned pro in 2017, so you've not been pro that long then.
No, so, I've had, this is my third season,
season as a pro, so how's that fair then? I'll just talk us through that journey then. So obviously you started on the you played a bit in Portugal, and then I understand you've done a couple of seasons on the Euro Pro Tour, so just build that up for us. How did that go?
So like I say, I did a bit in Portugal as a warm-up to after turning pro to pre-Euro Pro qualifying, just to get ready for Euro Pro, really. And fortunately, like I say, performed well at Euro Pro qualifying, because that's a big pressure sort of environment that you've got, like, I don't know, there was 250 out at the final stage, and there's only 70 or something going to make the cut. So there's 170, 180 players there who are going to have nothing to play in. Like, so you've got to be on it to give yourself a chance to schedule what you want to do for the season. That, unfortunately, like I say, I played well. And yeah, EuroPro, I can't speak highly enough of it as a tour, really. It's not cheap for an entry fee.
You're the first one that's speaking highly.
Oh, really? I do think I understand people's frustrations with it, but I do think in terms of sort of, I guess, now kind of playing at that slightly higher level or whatever and seeing all the media stuff, and you've kind of seen all that at EuroPro. You've had cameras around you at EuroPro and stuff like that, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's getting you ready for the bigger events.
Exactly. Which is what they say they are. That's their aim, really. It is a development tour. You're not going to make maybe the top 10 on the order of merit make money at the end of the year. Maybe everybody else is probably in the hole, but if you can get off quickly, it kind of, you know, I think it's good. It's a good development tour, and there's a really good standard of player on there now. So, like I say, I enjoyed it.
Well, how long were you actually on the EuroPro tour before you moved to the Challenge?
So 2018 and 2019, two seasons. So I think I finished 42nd on the order of merit first season, and then 27th or something, 28th. So slight improvement, and then just had a good run at Q School. I never got close to graduating through the EuroPro, but I've never really been a consistent for a season sort of guy. I'll have my good weeks, my bad weeks, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yeah, so then you've qualified through the European Tour Q School, was it?
Yeah.
Last year. Where did you finish and how did that go?
Yeah, so I had to start off at stage one. So that was four rounds in France at a place called Hardlow. And I was with Big Sean, and Mark Hyde was caddying for Sean at that as well. And I had my brother caddying. So quite a good atmosphere, you know, between us four. But it's quite a tense place, really, Q School. But yeah, those four rounds, again, I played well. I think I finished third. I was in a run of, I'd had three or four top tens on EuroPro to finish the EuroPro season. I finished third there through a second stage, a place called Alenda in Spain, which was hit quite badly by some high winds. So it went into an extra day to get it finished. But again, I finished third there. I played well. And at second stage, I really noticed you get a lot of good golfers, really. Guys dropping down from European Tour, from Challenge Tour, they come in at stage two. So, but I was quite happy to finish third there. Again, you needed to finish sort of top 20 to get through. And then I got to final stage the week after, and I did pretty good there. That was a really good experience. It was four rounds stage one, four rounds stage two, six rounds stage three. So 14 in total. Yeah, it was.
And I thought you were a consistent for a while type of guy. That's probably more rounds I've played all season.
Yeah. I don't know what happened, kind of strung it along. No, I just got the ball rolling. You know, when it gets rolling, don't it? You get some momentum going.
Momentum's the one, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, massive, massive. So that six-round final stage, I knew that if you miss the cut, so they do the cut after four rounds, I knew that if you miss the cut, you're back to EuroPro. Even for all your efforts, you don't really get anything worth having on Challenge Tour. And the top, is it 70, made the cut, I think. And I was sort of about bang on 70th going into the fourth round. And I was like, you need a good round of golf here. Do you know what I mean? And
yeah.
But from the moment I stepped on the range to warm up, it was like, we're going to be all right today. Do you know what I mean? I felt good.
It.
And then every shot I hit, it was just good. I was in control, and I think I shot six under that day to go from just about making the cut to actually I'm now in the top 25, and you need to finish top 25 to get European Tour card. And it was like, right, well, actually, we could have a real good week here. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's crazy, the pressures, though, isn't it? Because I imagine the mindset going into that 70, thinking, if I don't have a good round here, I'm on the EuroPro, which is tier three. But if I do a good round, which you did, then the next day you're thinking, I could be on the European Tour card. It's crazy, the differences, isn't it?
The good thing, I think, for me was that it was my first experience at that stage. I was going into it with nothing to lose. I was playing EuroPro anyway, so I had everything to gain, whereas you kind of get the vibe from a lot of guys there who are on their way down. Do you know what I mean? They've come off European Tour or whatever. Yeah. They've not had the best of seasons. They're a bit more tense. It's a bit more, they need a good result to have their lifestyle they've had or whatever, you know.
I went on the European tour. If they had a few good results, they might buy a bigger house, bigger car. The next minute they're fighting for a Euro Pro car when they
it's crazy, it's cruel, yeah. Like, innit? Yeah, literally, because the guy that finishes wherever, 116th or whatever, you need to finish top 115 or whatever it is, Race to Dubai, he's probably earned 300 grand for the year. But unlucky, mate, you're going to challenge tour next year unless you do, you know what I mean? So it's kind of, it's quite brutal. But yeah, I really felt, because that's a lot of golf in a row, and I'd had the Euro Pro Tour Championships in the middle of that as well, in between stage one, stage two and stage three. So after that fourth round, I woke up the fifth day and I just felt knackered. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like, I'm top 25 now. I've just used all my mental energy to shoot what I shot to get to the fifth day. And It was like, but I just plugged away and then hold this like 60, 70 foot for eagle on the last to shoot 200 to keep me in the top 25. And I thought, wow, what's happened here?
Unbelievable.
And then, final day, and I played with Bradley Dredge and Johnny Caldwell, who both ended up getting their cards. And as we played 18, I had an eagle putt again, and Bradley Dredge had an eagle putt, but I knew he was one ahead of me, and the scores said top 25 is 11 under. But I knew, I had a feeling he would tip it to 12, if you know what I mean, because he was making eagle or birdie. If he birdied, he'd go to 12 anyway. And I left my eagle putt. It just sat on the edge of the frigging hole. And then my birdie meant I finished on minus 11. And as he made his, he happened to make eagle anyway, but the scores did tick to 12 under was the magic number. And I'd shot 11. So I missed by one. But like I say, I had nothing to lose and I gained a lot from it. So it wasn't as gutting as people maybe think or whatever.
Yeah, you didn't go away. Obviously, you were still gutted, but you didn't go away as disheartened as some people would have been, because you still got your full playing right. First Isle of Man, professional to get the full playing rights on the challenge tour as well, lad.
Sounds good.
Was that on your mind as well when you were over the putt? Like, oh my God, I'm doing it for the Isle.
Yeah, no, it wasn't on that putt, but it does, you know, I'm proud to represent the island and that, and it's good to kind of make history or whatever for the island. It's cool. Like,
it's amazing. It's amazing to see the flag on the leaderboard, because I say, we'll talk about it now. Obviously, this season, it's been a bit of a crazy one with COVID, but you've had a few European tour invites, haven't you? And due to your category, so we'll talk about that now. It's good to see that flag on there, because you're not used to seeing it. So should be proud, mate, definitely. So talk us through that then. Yeah. Obviously, it's been a mad year, obviously. I'm pretty sure you had your schedule all set for a full challenge tour. How's that been affected? And talk us through how this year's gone.
Yeah, it's kind of been, I don't mean to sound bad, because obviously COVID's been horrendous and there's a lot of people suffered and it's an awful thing, but I've kind of somehow come out of it kind of lucky in a way to have... I've had a 6-month dress rehearsal for next year, if you know what I mean. I've got to experience European tour. I've got to experience, I'd played one challenge tour event before I got me status at Q School. So I'd literally no idea of anything other than Euro Pro as a professional, really. I played a few events in South Africa at the start of the year, thinking, you know, that was going to be me. It was going to be challenge tour for the season. COVID happened, and then, because of COVID, I've actually played a lot more on the European tour than I have on Challenge Tour, which is kind of, in the end, I ended up playing a few challenges at the end of the year, hoping to get to the tour championships, which didn't matter because your status all rolls over anyway, but it would have just been a nice sort of thing at the end of the year. But I hadn't played enough, basically. I'd only played two tournaments going into that. But I think I played 8 in total on the European tour. So it's been great experience, great to kind of get to see what that level of golf is like and see where you stand and see what you got to get better at, etc. So it's been a really good experience.
And how have you found it, the levels, and in comparison? I imagine, is it a big gap?
Again, I think Euro Pro, the standard of golf is really good. And I do think a lot of guys on Euro Pro just need that opportunity. And then, but it's a massive thing to be comfortable, I think, at that level. Or, so like I played Portuguese Masters and I made the cut, and I ended up playing with Paul Ware, and he was a top lad and
local lad as well.
Top lad, really good golfer. And I was kind of like, I don't know, I felt like I played all right and we ended up shooting similar score or whatever. But I kind of made that court and I was kind of, I've made the court, that's good, it's a good week. And then Tommy Fleetwood made the court maybe a little bit behind me, but he was there to win it, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And lo and behold, he finished second, I finished, no, not saying anything. He's obviously an exceptional golfer, but he's there for that purpose where I've been there a little bit sort of like, oh, it's a good experience this, it's good to learn, or it's good to, do you know what I mean?
He's obviously been at it a lot longer though, and his expectations are different, isn't it?
But I think that's the difference in the standard is almost, it's your expectations, it's what you, he will have seen where he stacks up against the world's best, and he will feel really comfortable with that, whereas I kind of, it's all been a bit rabbit in headlights, sort of like, you know, there's Tommy Fleetwood on the range or whatever, and try and ignore that. And you're just there and you are just playing golf. But at the same time, you're like, you don't have a clue where you stand, if you know what I mean. So you're just happy to try and shoot a good score, which.
But knowing that now, then obviously is that, and you say you're building on that experience, you've got a free go at it. Has that changed your mindset now going to next year? If you get another pop at it, you're thinking, do you know what? Yeah. I am here to win. I'm not here just to make up the numbers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that has to be the goal. Do you know what I mean? That has to be what I'm trying to do. And I'm not, once I start to think about outcomes and stuff, I can get a bit lost in it all rather than just trying to do your bit. But
yeah,
certainly my expectations myself have gone up because I've actually realized I've always thought I'm just kind of winging it. I'm doing all right. Do you know what I mean? I don't really know what I'm great at. I'm just kind of, I play golf. I do all right at it. But I kind of realize actually parts of my game are good and there's other parts which need to improve, but I actually feel like I know how and who to go to and what to do to improve them. So I'm quite excited for it really.
It's one of them as well. We had David Shacklady on and he was like playing all 1836 Northern Pro Tours and whatever he's been doing around here. And then when he went to the seniors tour, he was like walking around like Woozy and like Montgomery and all these rather like pricey, he's calling them by these names. He's like, I just looked at them and they're just normal people at the end of the day. So what you're saying there, you see Tommy on the range. Once you have one round with Tommy, you just realise he's just a normal lad. A
normal bloke. And
Before this podcast, I was like, oh, Tom Gandhi ought to be in Torbally, but now I'm just speaking to him. He's like, just a normal fella.
Yeah, just an idiot that likes a pint. You know what I mean?
Right up our street, that mate.
The more you're in the mix with them and the more you're around them and they actually do a few knocks when you beat them, your confidence is going to grow as expectations, isn't it?
Exactly that. It kind of, I feel like I've been lucky to get some opportunities to get to see what those kind of level of players do at a tournament, if you know what I mean, and to learn from that. And obviously you've got to play well. You've got to play well at the right times, but playing well doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win, does it? But I certainly feel like I should hopefully feel a bit more comfortable next year because of this year, if you know what I mean. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I think you're lucky as well, Tom, because we've Sean came on, and the week later he won the Lancashire match play. So
match play, didn't he?
Bit of a bogey boys blessing, we call it. So pick your next tournament wise, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I should have gone to Dubai next week then, shouldn't I?
just jumping back a little minute there. Do you know when you said you've got six rounds to the final stage of the challenge tour?
Yeah.
Is that in a row?
Yeah, six days on the spin. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're tired,
I know everybody thinks you're just playing golf, like, which, you know, you'd play six rounds of golf on a lad's holiday and have seven nights on the beer, wouldn't you? But you're kind of...
I'm pretty sure you're not shooting 4 or 5 under those. No, exactly. The other side of the scorecard.
Yeah, exactly. And you kind of, you got your warm-up and you practice after and, you know, you end up there 7 hours a day, 8 hours a day, and you're on your feet the whole time. Fat boy like myself.
I've just got him from 15 holes there. My knees are gone.
Getting old, eh?
I know.
So you talk about obviously the fatigue and that sets in obviously in a 6 day. But I mean, I suppose on tour it's still a 4 day event, isn't it? You're still playing four days, and maybe a practice day before as well.
Fat
sometimes probably six, depending on how much practice you're putting in. So what type of team have you got around you? Do you have like a fitness coach and psychology? Do you do any of that? What type of team do you have around you to prepare for that?
I've got a really good team in terms of coming from Isle of Man, like I do. We've got like an elite athlete sort of sports academy institute. It's called Isle of Man Sport. And I've got within that my strength and conditioning coach who I do a lot of stuff with, particularly over winter. I mean, he probably hates me for, but every time I'm away, you know, I want to, because I do, I get quite strong over winter, and you know, you feel good mentally, that I think that helps. And then it comes to the season and all the traveling and all the golf, and it just tails off. So I still struggle with that a little. But yeah, and then I've got Duncan McCarthy, who's Underpin Sports for performance and psychology stuff. So he's been we started working together this year, and we've made some good steps forward, I think. So yeah, I'm quite lucky. And then I have a putting coach, Graham Roberts, who is down in Cheshire. Sean, he actually coached a bit up at SNA recently, did some short game lessons, I think. He's really good. I started working with Graham 2019 summer, and just literally put a new system in place from a putting, and it was like, actually, I can put now. So, you know what I mean? It was a massive difference. And then, like I say, I went on that run at top 10s and Q school. So that was good. And my long game coach, Charlie Simpson, he's at Castown over here. So he's like one of my mates, and it's great, great crack. See him most days, really, for practice, and has a look over stuff. So it's been really good having a team of my choosing around me. I'm working on stuff that between us we can, you know, we need to get better at or whatever. Whereas, like, going back to the England sort of stuff, it felt a bit like this was their model and you kind of had to sort of fit into it a little. It's not like that. It's probably a bit of a disservice on them, but that's how I sort of felt a little bit. So I've been quite good, quite enjoyed taking ownership of it myself, if you know what I mean.
You know what? You wouldn't be the first person to actually say that, enough about the England setup, but we had a pro on that spoke about the Scottish setup, and he was like, I wouldn't kiss the right asses, I wouldn't say the right things, and I never got picked for the squad. So
yeah, it's kind of one. It is. It's the one time in our sport where you are judged, and that's like, it's not necessarily just done on numbers, it's done on, you know what I mean? That's the best thing with golf, is if you shoot 70 and I shoot 72, you win. That's it.
Yeah.
But they would still find a way to pick the guy who shot 72. At times, if they liked him more than, you know what I mean?
Well, sometimes he said that as well. He said it's not what you know, it's who you know.
I enjoyed my time there, and I really enjoyed all the coaches, but at times it, you know,
it can feel like that.
Yeah.
Feel like that, yeah. So what was it like playing on the air? I know we've obviously touched on it there. So you've played more on the European tour. So what other tournaments did you play this year on the European tour, and what were they like?
I started in January at the SA Open. That was really cool. That was my first tournament since Q school. Yeah, that was really good. And then I played a load of Ryder Cup venues in a row. I played a Belfry, I played Kelly Manor, Hanbury Manor as well. That's not a Ryder Cup venue. And then I went to Valderrama, which was one of the best places I've ever been. Couldn't believe how good it was. I played awful, but I didn't care. It was beautiful. I've had a good run of it over summer, and it's been really good. I played Italy as well. Scotland and Italy. Yeah, sorry.
So the Axel, Fairmont?
Fairmont, yeah. Which, I don't know if you've ever been, but they were some of the best greens I've ever putted on there.
Well, I went in September and played the Castle Course next door. And they're crazy. Have you played the Castle Course before?
I'm not sure. I don't think I have played that one, no.
No, it's an amazing, so picturesque, you'll know off Fairmont what it's like along the coast and things like that. But the greens, some of them are a bit Mickey Mouse greens. It's just
really,
you fall off a cliff edge and you've gone 80-90 foot away. It's another five shots for me from there.
Is that where all your first putts were going?
Unfortunately, you know me too well. So no, back to you then, Tom. So what's next then, mate? What are the plans moving forward? Because you've got You don't. So I take it then, because of what's happened with COVID, you don't lose any of your playing rights. You don't have to go through the Q school. So have you got
no?
This give you more time to prepare, or how's it work?
Yeah, it's impossible to know, really. So everything stays the same. Like, you don't lose your status. The only thing that will happen for me in terms of my European tour category is that there's a category for winners, and there's a category for Challenge Tour winners as well, which is slightly ahead of mine. So every Challenge Tour event that's been played this year, the winner of that will now go ahead of me. So I might not get in as many European Tour events, but it's impossible to say. They haven't published any sort of schedule for Challenge Tour for next year. There's talk of going back to South Africa in February, March for Challenge Tour, but wait to find out on that, really. And then, European Tour is just, every one of the events I played has been, you find out on the Tuesday, basically, and you team up on the Thursday. Yeah, they've all been really late notice. So I just have to, because some of them, I was sort of 40th reserve, the entries closed, and I was like, oh, well. And then all of a sudden on the Monday, you get the email to say, you're second reserve, are you going to go? All right.
Well, and what if you're not anywhere near the place, like?
Well, that's it. You just got to find a way to get there, or you don't go, really.
Yeah.
So it's tough, it's tricky, but it being fortunate that a lot of the European tour stuff this year was in the UK or in mainland Europe, so it hasn't been too bad. But
yeah.
And so you're staying up and be like, oh, but come on, I've travelled all this way. That is
it does happen. One of my mates for the Challenge Tour, he travelled out to South Africa at the start of February. Didn't get in as first reserve and just flew home to South Africa. Like, can you imagine?
Oh my God. They knew
he was on site, and you'd think, come on, just let us go out at the end of the field, will you? But
no. Even just let us play and pretend I'm in the zone.
Yeah. I won't take no money. I just want to knock.
I'll even pay me green fee.
So we'll see. Really, I don't know. Hopefully, things can clear up, can't they? If there's vaccine comes in or whatever, and all that stuff.
Yeah, it's a bit unknown at the moment, isn't it? But hopefully it will be. So, what's the plans over the winter? Are you just going to stay in the Isle of Man and just? Have you got no tournaments lined up now? Then before.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I'd have got in Dubai next week, but I decided against it. I could have hung around in the UK, but I had to stay in a hotel. Golf courses are short anyway. It was too far out to know if I'd have got in. Dubai, like I say, the reserve stuff drops off quickly. So, and then I've come home, I've isolated for 2 weeks. It's not been much. It's not been good not being at home, if you know what I mean.
So yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
I'm not going to go for a week to come back to do two more weeks that close to Christmas. So, I just got to wait and find out what happens in the new year, really. But if it drags, I'll probably try get a job doing something. But we'll see. Really, it's hard to tell at this point.
It's interesting there that you're obviously you think like European Tour and like Challenge Tour that you're there, but then you're still talking jobs. So then again, this professional route always comes down to money every time, every level, even at that level. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I am really, really fortunate coming from where I come from. That there's a lot of guys who want to support me and sponsor me, and I am very lucky in that regard. But I see that as that's funding me to play golf, but you still got to live in between now and Challenge Tour. If it doesn't happen in February, going to South Africa, it's not going to be till May. So it's a long time to just practice and sit around, isn't it? So I don't know. We'll have to play it by ear, really. Hopefully, I'm hoping every day we're going to get an email giving us an idea of what next year looks like. But so obviously, it's hard for a tour. Yeah. The tour don't even know. Nobody knows what travel's going to look like, do they? So it's hard to say.
But with there being nothing on the horizon, then wouldn't have Dubai been the go then, no?
Yeah.
In hindsight, is that sort of thing?
Yeah, but it's just this isolation. Every time I come home, it's a killer. Like, I haven't swung a golf club. I've been doing some short game stuff in the garden, but I haven't swung a golf club for 2 weeks to go out to Dubai to try and get sharp in 3 days to play a tournament. You know what I mean? It's a lot. Yeah, probably in hindsight, like you say. It might have been a way to do it, but you know.
It's so interesting that you're in isolation, because we've had a couple of podcasts and I've been like, how's Terrell Hatton playing there? Then he's going to Portugal, then he's in America, well, and then he's coming back, and there doesn't seem to be no isolation period for these people.
Well, you kind of, every time you go to the tournament, you're in a bubble, so you got to be tested upon entry and whatever. Then it's all like that, but the European Tour of being able to get an agreement with like the UK government, so you get an exemption from quarantine. You're not allowed to go to bars and stuff, but you can go out and practice and that. But my government over here, our government, have told me they're not having it. So,
is that why you would have to stay in the UK?
So I got quarantine like everyone else, exactly. Yeah, so
stay away from your family a bit longer and all that. It's a tough decision, isn't it? I imagine.
Yeah, it's not the easiest life, but. Is why there's worse problems in the world, isn't there?
Exactly. Yeah.
So we'll take Sean and Mark out the equation, because I know they'd be one and two. Who's the best player you've ever played with, Tom?
In terms of actual world ranking and stuff, I guess it'd be Paul Waring. But I tell you what, I played with Masahiro Kawamura. I don't know, Japanese guy. I played with him.
What you mean. Yeah,
I've never seen a short game like it. Think good and just out of this. So, and that's a part of the game I'm not, that's not a strength necessarily, or hasn't been in the past. And to watch somebody do what he did the way he did. I was just so impressed by it. So I've always been impressed by the boys who were in their late 30s, 40s, whatever, still earning good money. I played with Wade Ormsby, you know, he's in his 40s.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's just like straight. If he misses the green, it's probably the chip is going to have a look. He's going to hold his putts. He just so efficient. You know what I mean? I get more impressed by that than I would. Wilco Nienaber might be a bit different, but you know what I mean? Watching somebody sling driver miles, it's kind of, that's cool, but can you actually score unbelievably well? Well, those are the people that impress me, I think.
Yeah, we spoke about Wilco Nienaber that last week, didn't we, Kev, about it? Unbelievable. 460-odd yard drive, and he just bombs it, doesn't he?
Well, that hole, that is, I played with a lad, because I played that tournament at the start of the year, and I played with James Dupree. He's a South African guy, but he's 6'10", and he, like, I thought I'd hit an half decent one there, because it's, you're at altitude and it's whatever. And I think I hit it about 340, 350 down there. And he was, it had to be 100 yards past me. Had to be. Like, he was so far down. But we both made four. So it was, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's kind of one of them, isn't it? But yeah, that Nienaber, I was at the Belfry and like, he was on the range. And even Lee Westwood stopped and got his phone out to record him swing it. Do you know what I mean? Like,
that's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah, everybody is kind of, he's got maybe got to be a little bit careful not to be a show pony sort of thing. He's obviously got to have other skills, and he obviously does, because he's very, very good. But
he was unlucky last week, wasn't he, with the bogey finish, yeah. But he's up there again this week, isn't he?
Do you know the bad thing is about him? I only watched him play two holes, and he went 6-6 down the par 4, par 5, and I was thinking, he's shite.
Yeah. Yeah, you can do that, eh?
I've shown well more sixes than him.
Yeah. Yeah, but there's plenty of guys. Well, there's not plenty of guys that long, is there? But that's something I did find. I haven't found, well, maybe it's just the people I've played with who, it's not like that many people bomb it that far. Do you know what I mean? I know the fad at the moment is that you've got to hit it as hard and as far as you can. Everybody wants to be Bryson sort of thing.
All speed, yeah. What's your opinion on that then? What do you think? Have you incorporated that into your practice or anything, or have you just done what you know?
I'd be lying if I didn't feel like I needed to get better at it. I've got speed sticks now. You know, it is part of my gym stuff. But at the same time, like, there's plenty of guys still winning on the PGA Tour who aren't bombers, aren't they? But you do look at the top in the world rankings. Those boys do bomb it, don't they? So
yeah,
it clearly is shifting that way. Maybe just what the golf I have seen hasn't quite, as in I've come to the European Tour and played some events, and maybe I've seen the guys who are still efficient and making scores and not quite seen the young bombers coming through just yet. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? Obviously it's there in the PGA Tour. It seems different, but the golf courses they seem to play don't seem to have much of an issue if you want to hit it offline either. So I don't know.
Just a quick one about yourself there again. What are your strengths and like weaknesses actually on the course?
Yeah, I think I'm a good iron player generally. Mid long irons, I tend to make more birdies with a 5-iron than a wedge. It seems to be, but I don't know. That's one of my strengths. I feel like I'm a pretty good driver of the ball in terms of fairways and stuff. I don't bomb it, but I'm not short either. I'm, you know, pretty average but straight, and then good with an iron. But I've got a lot better at putting, and I'm working on the short game pitching side of things, trying to get those really tight as well, because, you know, that's where it's at. That's where your score's made, isn't it?
That's it,
100%. Well, look, it's been great today to get some insight into what you're doing and your journey, where you've been representing the Isle of Man. It's amazing to see you, mate, yeah.
Nice one. No, it's been
good. Now that you've got the bogey boys blessing, you should actually try and get the first flight to Dubai, man.
Yeah, should really. Guaranteed win, innit?
Yeah,
that's it. You need to do your first, yeah?
Yeah. Too late.
Well, but I appreciate you taking the time to speak to us, mate. And I hope I know it's only one day to go, but once the isolation's up, you get yourself back out there playing. Of course, it's still open in the Isle of Man and everything's still normal.
Yeah, it's all as normal. Yeah, they had like Christmas light switch on the other day, and I saw a photo, and there was about 8,000 people there or something, all like packed in. It's like, it just looks so strange because obviously it's not like that anywhere else in the world at the moment. But we are lucky. This tough border policy has kept it out to an extent. So, we're quite lucky to carry on So as of Sunday, I'll be down the pub for a pint, I think.
Not jealous at all. But next time you're over, mate, just give us a shout. We'll have a catch up.
Yeah, we'd love to.
You get out and have a game with the bogey boy, see if you can beat us.
Yeah, no, that'd be good. Yeah,
plus 2-1 to you, it is, by the way.
Yeah, 2-1, yeah, with loads of shots.
Nah, good. Thanks, boys. Thanks for having me.
No, thanks for coming on. We appreciate you taking the time, mate.
No worries at all.
And we wish you the best of luck for next year. Obviously, we'll be keeping an eye on you and keeping in touch. And thanks for sharing your story with us. Really good.
No problem at all. I've enjoyed it. Thanks.
Good luck next season.
Cheers, boys.
Good luck with Everton, Tom.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers.